Hello and welcome to episode 16 of Shooting the Breeze, the formal gun podcast of WaltonPA.com. And in this week's show, I've got a handful of stuff for you, but I think I'm going to change the format a little bit. Last week when I recorded episode 15, I was really tight on time and I decided to do a condensed episode. And basically what I did was I just took two news articles, two discussion topics, and then just kind of ran with it. And I did it in an effort to save time and to trim the podcast length down a little bit, but I wound up liking it much more. When I went back and edited the video, it seemed to flow a little better with a little less content. And, you know, I think I want to give that another shot. So I've got two news articles for you today. I've got two featured content pieces for you today. And I've just got some random stuff for the pre-show banter. And the discussion topic of the episode is going to be pocket carry. Some thoughts on it, my experiences with it, and an issue or two that I'm having with the DeSantis Nemesis pocket holster. So with all that said, let's get rolling on into the show. The first order of business in the pre-show banter little portion of the show is going to be an update on the Spyderco Delica 4. I'm sorry, the Spyderco Native 4. And this has been my everyday carry knife for the past, I think we're going on 3 weeks now. And I haven't used the knife a whole lot since the last episode, so there's not much to tell you in terms of an update. What I can tell you is I'm still adjusting to the weight of the knife. It does feel much heavier than the Delica 4. However, I like the footprint the knife has, more or less. In the hand, it feels really comfortable. I can choke up on it, and it feels like a precision tool, not so much like a knife meant for hacking. You know, this feels like it's meant for precision. It fits the hand really well. It's comfortable, and you know, for the light cutting duties that I've had with it so far, it's performed really well. So that is your really short update on the Spyderco Native 4 for the week. And in case you're wondering, I am putting it in my left pocket. I am right-handed, and at some point in time, I'll tell you why I'm doing that and why it kind of makes sense for me, but it probably won't make sense for you on the listening end of the camera, or the viewing end. Another thing I wanted to talk about was I pre-ordered the book Shoot, Your Guide to Shooting in Competition by Julie Golub. I received a Google Plus invite for the Shoot book Google Plus page or something. I clicked through. I was reading some information on the book itself, and it seemed pretty cool, so I put a pre-order in. It's going to be a little while until I get the book. I believe the ship date is sometime in February. The book covers firearm safety, why shoot, guns and gear by sport, fundamentals of shooting, how to get started, advanced skills, and practice technique. And this is all for competitive shooting stuff. And since I've been getting into competitive shooting more and more over the last couple of months and getting really heavily involved, I thought this was a really good way to sharpen my skills, get a little better, see some areas where I definitely need some work, and read something that is very up-to-date. I was kind of interested in buying the Brian Enos book at one point in time, but I believe it was a year or two or something behind, whereas it was published a couple of years ago, and you know, I wanted something kind of current and in the right now, and this book gave me the opportunity to do that. And the book was really inexpensive too. It was $11.41 with my Amazon Prime membership. It was $11.41, so it ships free, and that just seems like a really affordable price just to take a gamble on a book that I haven't read or haven't heard much about, or a book that's coming out in a few months. So Julie Golub is one of the handful of people that I really like in the industry, or really like as far as competitors go. She's one of the handful that I actually know by name. And I just, you know, I've seen her on Shooting USA and things like that, and she seems like a really down-to-earth person, and I just kind of like her. So when her book became available, I put the cash down and pre-ordered. So From there, the only other thing as far as the pre-show banter goes that I want to talk about is a USPSA match that I shot yesterday. It's probably going to be the last one of the season for me. Up here in Pennsylvania, we get, I don't want to say we get hard winters, but we get snow and ice on a regular basis throughout the winter months. And a lot of the area clubs, because they're all outdoors and because they're all in rural areas, they all shut down for the winter season. It makes it really tough to get back in and out of the club when there's snow and ice on the ground, when you have an unpaved road or a gravel road leading back into a clubhouse. So for me, in my four-door sedan, it's virtually impossible for me to get back there with front-wheel drive and several inches of snow on the ground. So it's not something I was really looking forward to doing. If I could find a friend with a four-wheel drive truck and we can get back there, that would be something else. But the shooting sports sort of die down in the winter here, and the last regular match was, for me, was probably yesterday. Today's Monday, so yeah, yesterday. And so if you were getting kind of sick of seeing all the USPSA match video on the blog, you shouldn't have to worry about that too much anymore. Not until March, April, May, around then. You'll see some of the clubs start opening back up. And, you know, hopefully I can get back into shooting and stuff then. The good thing about the Julie Golub book coming out in February is that it'll give me the opportunity to read the book and then sort of dive right back into USPSA shooting, because I should finish with the book around the same time the clubs are opening back up, or at least the same time I start practicing again, because it's fairly warm and we don't get too much snow at that point in the year, so... So it should all work out timing-wise. It's going to kind of suck just sitting around without much to shoot, or not much shooting going on in the winter. But that is your pre-show banter, so let's get rolling with the news and get this show on the road. This week in the news, as I mentioned earlier on, I have two news articles for you. The first comes from the Richmond Times-Dispatch, and it is a story that's been making the rounds a little bit, or actually more than a little bit, as of late. So you may or may not have heard this little piece already. And again, this comes from the Richmond Times-Dispatch. It was published on Monday, November 21st. And it goes on to say, man killed by his own concealed weapon. This was actually published on November 18th. That's why there was a bit of a pause in there, because I'm looking at the at the date, and I'm thinking, this thing wasn't published today. I read this a few days ago. But apparently there was an edit in here somewhere today. So, published originally on November 18th, and it goes on to say, a Spotsylvania County man with a valid concealed weapon permit died after a semi-automatic pistol without an external safety discharged as he tried to adjust the weapon, which was tucked into his waistband, investigators have concluded. The 45-year-old man was sitting in the front seat of his family's minivan in a shopping center parking lot on Sunday when his .40-caliber Glock discharged, authorities said. For some reason, maybe for comfort, he reached out and went to adjust it, said Spotsylvania Sheriff Captain Liz Scott. The detective thinks that in doing so, in just grabbing it, he inadvertently grabbed the trigger. This particular weapon does not have an external safety, Scott added. The single shot struck the man in the hip, and he bled to death in a matter of minutes, the captain said. The incident is at least the second in Virginia in 15 months in which a concealed carry permit holder accidentally shot himself in public. On September 11, 2010, a Bedford County man with a permit accidentally shot himself in the thigh at Lynchburg Restaurant as he apparently reached into his pants pockets to pay a bartender for a beer. The .45-caliber Glock 36 was unholstered. Permit holders are not permitted to drink alcohol in restaurants while carrying a concealed weapon. I really don't see how that has anything to do with the guy reaching into his pocket and having the gun discharged, but kind of add a little insult to injury there. The man was later convicted for recklessly handling a firearm, given a 30-day suspended jail sentence, and fined $500. He also was ordered to give up his concealed carry permit for a year. He broke the law, he lost the license. Understandable. In the Spotsylvania case, police said the victim was sitting inside his family's van with his four children outside the Giant grocery store in Harrison Crossing Shopping Center. The man's wife was about halfway out of the van, intending to walk to the store to return a DVD, when she heard a pop, which she and the children, all younger than 10, initially believed was a balloon bursting. There were balloons in the van. The man threw the gun to the floorboard and said, "Oh my God, I think I just shot myself," according to Scott. The man was pronounced dead after being taken to Mary Washington Hospital in Fredericksburg. Scott described the man's gun as a .40 caliber Glock 27 with a small pistol grip. Police declined to identify him, citing a department policy barring the release of victims' identities in self-inflicted death cases. Glock semi-automatic handguns and other safe-action pistols have a series of internal safeties rather than an external that prevent the gun from discharging unless the trigger is pulled, said J.D. McEwen, who runs the firearms department at the Southern Police Equipment. Such guns need to be carried in a quality holster that keeps the trigger guard covered, he said. And unfortunately, this gentleman, as tragic as it is, wasn't following the proper safety protocol, McEwen said. The victims in Spotsylvania and Lynchburg shooting cases represent only a tiny fraction of those holding concealed carry permits in Virginia. As of Thursday, 275,428 people held active concealed handgun permits in the state, according to the Virginia State Police Transaction Center. So, you know, this isn't a real heartwarming self-defense story where the good guy, you know, saved the day and the bad guy got what was coming to them. This was a really tragic case of a guy carrying a pistol on his hip without the use of a proper holster, and then in an attempt to adjust it, he must have got his finger in the trigger guard and discharged the weapon. And to make matters worse, as if him dying wasn't bad enough, he died in front of his four children, which is even worse. And his wife was nearby when all this went down, and it's really sad to think that those four children are going to remember seeing their father inadvertently shoot and kill himself over such a simple matter of not having his gun in a proper holster. So if you take anything away from this news article, never stick a gun in your waistband without it being inside of a proper holster. For the second and final news article of the day, I have something a little less tragic. And this one was published by WLOX13, which appears to be an ABC affiliate. And it goes on to say, gun-toting woman foils purse snatcher's plan. And this was published on November 17th and updated the same day. So it goes on to say, in Ocean City, Mississippi, a would-be purse snatcher got more than he bargained for when the 60-year-old woman he tried to rob pulled a gun on him. Ocean Springs police were called to Walmart Wednesday night around 8:30 to investigate the attempted robbery. The woman said that she was loading groceries into her vehicle when a man walked up and tried to take her purse from her shopping cart. She held onto it, but the man wouldn't give up. Finally, the victim pulled a .380 caliber handgun she carried for personal protection and pointed it at the man, who quickly ran away. The woman wasn't injured during the assault. Investigators used the store's security video to help identify two suspects. 16 hours later, they tracked the men down to room 107 of the Imperial Motel. Donald James, name I can't pronounce, 27, and Vernon Dale Rowe, 33, are each charged with one count of robbery and are being held in the Ocean Springs Municipal Jail, awaiting an initial appearance. Police said both men were homeless at the time of their arrest. And, you know, and anyone with information should be asked, are asked to contact the police. So, really short news article, and it kind of put a smile on my face that the old woman, I really shouldn't call her an old woman, but the 61-year-old woman was able to foil the plan. And, you know, you gotta be some kind of down and dirty kind of individual to try to rob a 61-year-old woman of her purse when she's loading groceries into her vehicle. I mean, I hope that individual had to change his shorts when he went running away when this older woman whipped out a pistol and pointed it at him because he was trying to take her purse. I don't know that she would have been justified in shooting him, which is a good thing that she wasn't charged or anything with pointing a gun at him. But in this case, everyone got away okay. There were no shootings, no one was injured. So, that's the upside of the story. But even more of an upside is that the two bad guys were caught later on, and they're going to get what's coming to them. So. Awesome on the old lady for carrying a gun. Again, there we are again. Awesome on the old lady. Great on the older woman for carrying a gun. And, I'm really glad that she was protecting herself and nothing bad happened. Because you never know what can happen. Someone starts fighting. They don't want to give up their purse. These two guys could start beating on her. And just a bad situation could get even worse. So good on her for having the means to protect herself, and good on the police for catching the two bad guys. Now that the news is finished, I have two pieces of featured content for you. Now, if you're unfamiliar with this podcast, what I do for featured content is basically look through Google Reader, all the subscriptions that I have, to podcasts, blogs, video blogs, anything gun-related that piques my interest throughout the week. I star it, and then when it comes time to do the show notes for the episode, I start looking through all the items that I starred throughout the week, and then I take, in this case, two of them that I found most interesting, and then I feature them and urge you to go check them out for yourself. Now, the first piece of featured content I have for you is episode 146 of the Handgun World Show, which is entitled Texas Tactical IDPA. Now, this podcast is put on by Bob Main, I believe, and he is a podcaster on the Gun Rights Radio Network. I have been subscribed to Bob's RSS feed for a little while now. However, over all this time, I haven't had time to fit him into my podcast rotation. And I really shouldn't say I haven't had time. I've just been so engrossed with these other podcasts that I've found it difficult to add new ones into the rotation. And if you've listened to me in the past, basically what I do as far as my podcast listening goes is I'll download a bunch of stuff, about 700 megabytes worth, and then I'll dump it onto a disk. I'll then use that data disk in my car, and I'll listen to it during my commute. Now, for the last several months, my commute has been more or less 15 to 20 minutes from the time I leave my house till I get to work, and then 15-20 minutes from work to the babysitter, and then 15-20 minutes from the babysitter back to my house. And this was sort of the rotation several days a week. I work from home a couple of days. And we recently went through a change in the family, and my daughter is no longer going to the babysitter. So my commute is much shorter. Actually, I chop like 15-20 minutes off my commute. So with even less time in the car, these data disks tend to last me quite a while. And because they last so long, it's difficult for me to add things into the rotation because I'm trying to keep current with podcasts as well as work backwards to get more of the show and get a feel for where the show has come from. So for instance, every week what I try to do, or when the new podcast disc needs to be made, I try to get caught up on the last couple of episodes of Gun Dudes. So for instance, if I go through a disc in 2.5 weeks, I'll put the two latest episodes of the Gun Dudes on there, and then I might go back three more and add those to the disc. So I may have episode 174, 175, and then episode 100 and 101, however it works out. And then I'll do that with a variety of podcasts. And the rotation, for the most part, has been Gun Dudes, Pro Arms Podcast, and I'm mixing in and out other ones like Gunfighter Cast and just a Barstool Discussion and things like that. So I've got a rotation of podcasts, and it's really hard to introduce a new one with the current system. But what I did was I introduced a new one, and that was the Handgun World Show, because I wanted to check it out. So I've gotten through all five episodes that I put on that disc, and the most interesting one was this episode 146 on the Texas Tactical IDPA. And what I found most interesting in this episode is that it wasn't just a discussion on IDPA and how to shoot it and what the equipment is and things like that. This is an actual episode where Bob is in his car driving to an IDPA match. He's telling you about the match, what he expects to experience at the match. He's telling you a little bit of history on IDPA, how he views IDPA, in relationship to firearm training in general and trigger time and things like that. And then once he arrives at the IDPA match, he's walking around with the recorder. So he's getting some information on stage descriptions. He records the shooter briefing at the beginning of the day, and he interviews one of the newer shooters to IDPA, and then he kind of closes it out by talking about how he performed throughout the match and things like that. And I found it to be a tremendously interesting episode, for one, because I'm really interested in trying IDPA. All of my competitive shooting matches, a grand total of 5 of them, have been in USPSA, which is a totally different sport. It's action pistol, but a different set of rules, and it's got sort of a different mindset. But I've been seeing all these really interesting stages for IDPA, and I'm really interested in giving it a try, and I just assumed that it was going to be very similar to USPSA. By listening to this episode with Bob, I kind of got... I was able to be a fly on the wall at an IDPA match, and it confirmed my thought that the matches were going to be run similarly, and it eased any worries that I may have had getting into an IDPA match for the first time. So, really interesting episode, lots of really insightful information, just kind of a behind-the-scenes look, which I thought was great, and the interview with the new shooter, I really can't remember his name, which is unfortunate, but... He did a great job with the interview, and he put out some really insightful comments on being a new shooter to IDPA and what he viewed or how he viewed the sport and things like that. So definitely head over to the Handgun World Show and check out the episode 146 where Bob talks about the Texas Tactical IDPA match he attended. For the second and final piece of featured content on the episode, I have something from a blog that I've never featured before. Now, the credit for introducing me to this blog, or the blogger, and the blog itself, should probably go to Miguel over at Gun Free Zone. I've been talking with Miguel off and on fairly regularly on Twitter, and because I talk to him on a regular basis, or a semi-regular basis, I keep an eye out for his little Twitter icon, and when I see it, I automatically read it, just because we converse enough that, you know, his little Twitter icon or avatar stands out to me. Now, mixed in with his tweets, every now and again he talks to the Twitter handle Fill Your Hands. Now, the side of the conversation that I've seen, or that I was seeing at the time, looked fairly interesting. So I clicked through and I followed Fill Your Hands as well. And then from reading his tweets and the conversation that he was carrying on with others, I clicked through and started checking out his blog. Well, I subscribed to his blog, and I've been keeping an eye on it for the last, I don't know, couple of months maybe. And there's been some really interesting stuff come up. It's a wide variety of topics, mostly surrounded by gun culture, but it's not just one particular thing or another. You know, it's not like straight politics or straight competitive shooting. There's a mixture of different stuff that he puts on his blog. And the topic that grabbed my interest most recently was a USPSA match rundown that he did at the Cherokee Gun Club. So, inside this post with the match rundown, he has some video, and he talks about meeting Dave Savigny, and it looks as though he was squatted with him. I'm not quite sure how you go to a local level match and get squatted with Dave Savigny, but I think it's awesome that not only did he get squatted with him, but he was able to talk to him, and... I just think it's a tremendous learning experience to be able to be squatted with someone like Dave Savigny. I say Dave like I know him. I've never met him, and I've just seen videos of his stuff. But, I think it's really cool that he was able to be at a match with Dave Savigny and then see him address his stage and then sort of compare notes, see how he shot the stage versus the professional. And I think that's a tremendous learning experience. And in the blog post, he has some video of himself shooting a stage, and then he shows how Dave shot the stage. Again, Dave shows how Dave Savigny shot the stage. So it's really interesting to see him compare notes on what he feels as though he needs to work on and how he can improve his USPSA shooting. Now, one of the most interesting things about this blog post is that it's kind of in-depth in how he's viewing his performance. Now, a lot of times when I look up USPSA information, whether I find a blog post or I find some video on YouTube, it's generally kind of generic. There's not really in-depth information there. I mean, a lot of times you find tips or how someone shot the stage and things like that, but there's never a lot of in-depth information, and I found in-depth information here where someone was analyzing their shooting and talking about how they plan on shooting better next time. Because one of the things that I do when I shoot these USPSA matches and then do a blog post on them is I provide the video and then I'll do a write-up of each stage. I talk about the stage description, I talk about how I shot the stage, how I think I could do better. And these blog posts tend to get really big. I mean, the last one I wrote was something like 3,000 words. There's probably very few people that are actually going to read that start to finish, and there's probably even less that even care about competitive shooting, when you look at the whole shooting genre as a whole. So, seeing someone with a common mindset on the subject kind of got my juices flowing, and I was really interested in reading it, and I started talking a little bit in the comments section about how I address swingers, and I'm not talking about swingers that grab keys out of a punch bowl, but the targets that are set up on an arm, and when you engage the arm, these things start moving, they swing, and you have to shoot them. But there was a lot of interesting information there, and I'm really digging the USPSA stuff on the Fill Your Hands blog. So if you're also into USPSA shooting, I would strongly suggest you head on over to Fill Your Hands and check out the match report of the USPSA match at the Cherokee Gun Club by Fill Your Hands. Well, it is that time in the show where we do one of my favorite portions of the show, and that is the cigar and drink pairing of the evening. Now, I really shouldn't be calling this as the cigar and drink pairing because the drink part of the show has been the same for the last several episodes. What I'm drinking is Caribou Coffee Breakfast Blend K-Cups. I'm still working through this mutant mass-producing, just replicating box of K-Cups that my wife bought several weeks ago. Finally, I can see the bottom of the box, so there's light at the end of the tunnel. We'll be getting away from this coffee eventually, sometime soon, I hope. And we'll start talking about different things. I was going to do some sort of hard alcohol tonight. However, my liquor shelf is really looking pretty sparse, and I'm probably not going to be able to start restocking it until after Christmas. So just sort of bear with me. We'll just continue to do the coffee. Maybe we'll run out sometime soon. I've got my fingers crossed. And I can start mixing in different things. But for the time being, I'm not going to bore you to death with the coffee information. I've covered it time and time and time again, so there's really no need to revisit it. So let's dive right into the cigar information. Now, the cigar that I'm smoking is not precisely the cigar of the episode. What I have is the Oliva Serie V Liga Especial Robusto. The cigar of the episode is the Oliva Serie V Liga Especial number 4. Now, you may be wondering, what is the difference, aside from the very end? One is a Robusto, the other is a number 4. The number 4 is a different size. And the reason I didn't smoke it for this episode is because I was afraid that I would have no cigar left by the time I got to the cigar and drink pairing of the episode. When I do these podcasts, I'm kind of weird in the fact that I like to record them straight through. So everything, as you look at the show notes, that's how I recorded the episode. I really don't want to be bouncing around doing different topics at different times and trying to remember what I said, and it just seems really complicated. So to sort of dumb things down, I record this thing straight on through. And I was afraid that by the time I got to this point in the show, I'd have no cigar left, and I didn't want to have to light up a second one for the episode. So I'm smoking the Robusto. We're going to talk about the number 4. The number 4 is a size that from what I understand, wasn't even supposed to hit the U.S. market. Oliva had this smash hit of the Oliva Serie V. It did really well. I think it was released back in 06, 07-ish. And it had a great reception. It's a standard production cigar. It comes out regularly. They're easy to find. They're between 6 and maybe 8.50 for a single. And they're more along the lines of a premium cigar produced by Oliva. And when I say premium, I mean all of the stuff that Oliva produces are premium cigars. However, the Serie G and the Serie O, they're maybe $1.50, $2 less per stick than the Serie V. And that's kind of why I'm referring to it as a premium. It's one of the more expensive lines. But after this huge success with the Serie V, Oliva started getting into the international market, and they're doing things in, I believe it's Europe. And their cigars are going over really well. Well, the European market really doesn't like these big, fat cigars that the American market does. We smoke a lot of 60 ring gauge stuff. I don't personally smoke a lot of 60 ring gauge stuff, but the American market is saturated with it. And because the Cuban market kind of dictates what is sold in Europe and other places in the world, the most common ring gauge is much smaller than we have here. So Oliva takes this cigar and they introduce it to the European market. It's, from what I understand, when I was talking to the vice president of sales, is that the cigar was built for the European market. The U.S. market was getting none. Well, when the TAA show came out, which is a trade show for the, I don't even remember what the letters stand for, but it's kind of an obscure trade show. And they do these sort of bidding things on lots of cigars. It's a retail-only show. And Oliva decided that they were going to make a certain allotment of these number fours available to only people in the TAA, or people that attended the TAA show. Now, I don't know what happened, but more cigars than I thought were going to hit the U.S. market hit the U.S. market. And if you're interested in trying this cigar, as it turns out, Buckhead Cigar, which I don't even know if he's a member of TAA, but he has them, and they're available. The pricing on this cigar is $29.95 for a 5-pack delivered, or $116.95 for a box of 24 delivered. Now, the cigar, the number 4 is a Petite Corona, and it is a 5x43 ring gauge. Personally, I like the smaller format because the wrapper comes through a bit more, the cigar's a little spicier, a little sweeter. And I just think it hits the palate in all the right places better than the larger format does. The more spicy component in the smaller size is just much more appealing to me, I think. And the number 4 is one of my favorite sizes in the Serie V. Now, for whatever reason, the number 4 stops becoming available in the U.S. market, and you still want to try a smaller format Serie V, you can always buy the Lancero, which is a standard production. It's pretty much available everywhere, except for, because Lancero is a thin ring gauge, and, you know, most people here don't buy thin ring gauge stuff, they're a little harder to come by because a lot of shops don't stock them. It's not because they're not available, it's just that a lot of shops are selling the larger ring gauge stuff. But, again, full-bodied cigar, full-flavored, they smoke really well, they coat the palate with nice dense smoke, easy to get through the sinus. They're a nice aromatic cigar. They're not over the top. I've smoked them in the morning. I wouldn't advise it if you're fairly new to cigars. It may be a bit over the top, but they smoke really well for me early in the day, straight on through till the evening where I'm smoking this one. So if you're interested in trying this cigar, you can give Mike over at Buckhead Cigar a call at 404-844-0400. Mike is also on Twitter at Buckhead Cigar. And you can check out the cigars that Mike has on sale over at askthecigarguys.com. Now, as I've said in the past, Mike is not a paid sponsor of the show. He is just my preferred retailer, and he is always taking care of me when I needed to order cigars. So I like to talk about Mike. Since Mike takes care of me, I want to take care of him. You know, kind of a you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours kind of a thing. And Mike has been a fantastic retailer, and I've just never been disappointed with anything I've ordered from Mike over the past, I don't know, I've probably been ordering from Mike for 2.5 years since I met him at the IPCPR trade show in New Orleans. So Mike's a great guy. If you're looking to try the Oliva Serie V number 4, get in touch with Mike, and he'll hook you up. Welcome to the featured discussion part of the podcast. In this segment of the podcast, I basically do things a little less formal. I'm not reading news articles. I'm not telling you about things I found online. This is just kind of shooting from the hip and talking about something that's on my mind. And originally, I was going to do a review of the DeSantis Nemesis pocket holster that I purchased for my pocket pistol, which is a Smith & Wesson Bodyguard. However, with cutting back to 2 pieces of featured content and 2 pieces of news, the podcast sort of streamlined, and it wound up being much shorter than I would have liked. Generally, I want these podcasts to be just under an hour or an hour-ish. And the last time I looked at the time, it was something like 36 minutes. So I didn't think I had enough content to fill that 10-15 minute time span that I would have liked to have been in. So rather than talk about just the holster, I want to talk about pocket carry in general. And I really don't want to get into pocket carry versus carrying a gun on your hip or carrying a 380 round, because it's hotly debated, and I'm comfortable carrying the 380 ACP cartridge. It's okay. I'm not overly concerned with it having not enough stopping power and things like that, because personally, I think the fact of the matter is no one wants to be shot, whether or not they're going to be shot with a 22, a 32, a 380, 9mm. You know, it doesn't really matter. No one wants to be shot. And in a situation where I need to carry a gun in my pocket, this is what works for me. And I read something today. I don't recall where I read it, but it was from Say Uncle, and he said something along the lines of, pocket carry isn't ideal. However, it is the best way to carry a gun when you can't carry a gun. Ideally, I would like to carry a gun on my hip. I generally carry a Springfield XD subcompact in 40 Smith & Wesson on my hip. However, there are a lot of times when, even though that is a subcompact weapon and is very small and it conceals well, it's a bit too big, and I'm just more comfortable with having a more concealable pistol in my pocket. So when those times crop up, I have the Smith & Wesson Bodyguard, and I'm very comfortable with the size of the gun and the compromises that I'm taking by carrying around a more concealable, smaller frame weapon. So let's talk about the pistol. Now, as I said, I have a Smith & Wesson Bodyguard in 380, and it is inside a DeSantis Nemesis pocket holster. So before we do any talking about the gun, I first want to show you that it is unloaded. There's nothing in the magazine, and there's nothing in the gun. It's clear, racked the slide a bunch of times, completely clear. So while I'm not going to be pointing this gun at me, and I'm going to try not to point it at the camera, you can be at ease knowing that there is nothing in the gun and it is not loaded, so we can handle it a little more freely. Again, I'm going to try not to sweep myself with it, so I'm going to treat it as if it is loaded. However, you can be at ease knowing that it is not loaded. So, this is the Smith & Wesson Bodyguard. It is a polymer frame pistol, double action only, and it has, I believe, a 12-pound trigger pull. Some of the features that I liked about this pistol versus some of the others that I was looking at the time is that this one easily fits inside my pocket. I was initially looking at Ruger LC9, and I believe it's a Kel-Tec PF9, which are chambered in 9mm. They're a little bit larger, not by much, but they're large enough that they didn't fit comfortably in my pants pockets. So I was looking at the smaller frame stuff, and it was a toss-up. I didn't know whether I wanted the Ruger LCP or the Smith & Wesson Bodyguard. Now, I wound up going with the Bodyguard because it fit my hand really well. I was very comfortable with the way it felt. And it has very usable sights versus the Ruger LCP, which are like tiny little dots. In addition, it locks back on the last round, whereas the Ruger LCP does not. The Ruger LC9 does, however. So that was a nice little perk. Not really necessary, but it does lock back on the last round, and I like it. It also has a thumb safety. Not really necessary with a 12-pound trigger. However, it is kind of a nice peace of mind. You can use it, you can not use it. I do use it, and I train to pull it out of my pocket and disengage the safety. So, you know, you do have to sort of train around the manual safety that has to be disengaged for the firearm to work. Now, when I purchased this pistol, I also bought a pocket holster for it because I was uncomfortable with taking this gun and sticking it in my pocket as is. I didn't like the idea of the trigger being exposed. So I purchased the DeSantis Nemesis pocket holster, which is... it covers the trigger guard. It's shaped oddly enough that it doesn't look like a gun in your pocket. I mean, it looks like something large in your pocket, but it doesn't necessarily look like a gun because of this little shape down the bottom. It sort of, I don't know, malforms it in your pocket. And it's got this sort of rubberized coating on it. So when you go to draw this pistol out of your pocket, ideally what happens is the rubberized coating gets caught up in your pocket itself, and it slips off while the gun comes out, and you know, you do your thing with the gun. Now, I've noticed some problems with this holster. So, fortunately, I'm wearing pants in this podcast, so I can show you a little bit of what's going on when I go to draw this gun. So, I'm going to turn the camera off, and I'm going to stand up and try to reposition the camera so that you can see my pocket, and hopefully with this lapel mic with the dying battery, you'll be able to hear me talk, you know, as I'm showing you my pocket. So, let's go there. Alright, so because the Smith & Wesson Bodyguard is a pocket pistol, doesn't necessarily have to go in the pocket. They make holsters that conceal on your hip, nice and small. I believe Concealment Solutions makes one, Crossbreed makes one. But I was more comfortable with the concept of carrying in my pocket. Now, this time of year, I carry in my jeans. In the summertime, I'll wear cargo shorts and things like that, which are a little more baggy. But in the colder months, I like to wear jeans. Actually, I wear them sometimes in the winter too, or in the summer too. But for the most part, the pockets aren't as baggy as some of my other stuff. But the Smith & Wesson Bodyguard fits into my pocket without any problems, slips right in, and, you know, it doesn't look too bad. I mean, if I were to sit just right and pull my pants tight, depending on how I'm sitting, it becomes a little more visible. However, I have not run into any problems with anyone noticing that there was anything in my pocket, and if they did, they may just assume that it's a wallet or something. So, slips easily into the pocket. Not a big deal, conceals really well. And the premise of the pocket holster is that in the event that I need to get to my gun, I can reach into my pocket, get a full firing grip on the gun, and pull it out. Now, pocket carry isn't ideal, and the pocket holster should stay in the pocket. However, you'll notice that it did not. That is the problem I'm having with this pocket holster at this time. Now, remember I was telling you about those very usable sights and how great they are? Well, what's happening is the sights are getting held up inside the seam up here of the holster, and it ain't coming out. And I'm really struggling to train around this. I think I may need to purchase a new holster or get some new kind of rig or something, but at this point in time, I'm not really crazy about how this is working with this particular gun. So these sights, which are nice and large and fairly sharp on the edge, are getting caught up inside the seam. Now, as I push down on this, you can see it kind of click into place. And as it's moving forward, that is the sight kind of engaging on the seam. Now, as I said, it doesn't come out when you go to pull on it. So what I've had to do to adapt, and I'm sort of training around this, is when I get a full firing grip on the gun in my pocket, I have to kind of treat it like there's like a retention strap. And the first thing I need to do is kind of push down and forward with my thumb. As my hand goes into my pocket, I'm sort of getting half a grip and pushing down and then getting a full grip. And then it comes out without much issue. But once it's fully in there and engaged, it doesn't come out. And that's not a feature of the holster. It should not be a feature of the holster. But it kind of is. And it's becoming a real issue that I'm still trying to work around. But that's kind of what I have to do. Get half grip, just kind of flick it with my thumb to get it up, get the rear sight up and out of that seam so that the gun disengages. But again, slips into my pocket without issue, and it conceals really well. So in terms of having a gun that conceals in the pocket when, you know, being able to carry a gun when you can't carry a gun, this has been fantastic. I really like it, and, you know, I'm okay with giving up certain things like having a smaller caliber and things like that. So it works for me. I'm just not real crazy about this little feature. It's not really a feature, but I'm having issues with how it comes out of my pocket and how I have to deal with it before I go pulling on the gun and how I have to sort of use my thumb to disengage the rear sight. All right, so you've seen the holster. You've seen some of the issues, or you've seen the issue that I'm having with the holster. And, you know, before I kind of close it out as, you know, my experience with pocket carry, I should probably point out that the issue that I'm having wasn't an issue initially. When I first got the gun and the holster, it was coming out smoothly. It wasn't an issue. However, over time, the sights have created two little indents inside the holster, just below the seam, and that's where it's getting hung up. I tried to take some pictures. I don't know how well they're going to turn out, whether or not you'll be able to actually see the two little divots that the sight put in the holster. But, you know, I really don't want to have to go out and buy a new pocket holster every couple of months to prevent that from happening. And, you know, I'm probably going to have to look around for a different solution. In the meantime, you know, I have found a workaround, and I'm not crazy about the workaround, but it still allows me to carry a gun, even if it's not ideal. So I guess it's another thing that I'm giving up to be able to carry a really small frame gun in situations when I really can't carry a gun. So, you know, just add another check mark to things I'm giving up for convenience. Aside from that, the pocket holster and the gun combination has been great. As I said over and over and over again, I'm kind of rambling, but it conceals well, it carries well. I'm able to get a full firing grip on the gun in my pocket without it really looking like I've got a full firing grip on a gun. It just kind of looks like I've got my hand balled up in my pocket, and that's about it. I've never had to draw the gun or even reach for the gun, but, you know, as I'm walking around, I can just slip my hand in my pocket and I can get a full firing grip on the gun and it, you know, no one will notice. So in the event that things go bad and I need to indiscreetly get a full firing grip on the gun, I can do that without issue. Now, as I said, practicing with this gun is a bit difficult. Now, it's not difficult to shoot. The gun actually shoots really well. It's accurate up to about 15 yards. Beyond that, I really can't see the laser that's on the gun, especially in daylight. You can't see the laser out beyond 15 yards. It's just not bright enough. So when I practice with the gun, I'm not practicing with the laser. Another issue that I'm having with it is there's not really a report when you click the laser button. So sometimes you click it and it goes on. Sometimes you have to hit it 2-3 times before the button engages and things like that. So a couple of little issues here and there. I just don't use the laser. You know, it will work out great if something happens at night. You know, the laser will be nice and bright. But for general practice purposes, I don't use the laser. I don't get to practice with it as much as I'd like because 380 ACP is just tremendously expensive. The last time I went looking to purchase a box, it was something like $40 for a box of 100 rounds. And I can get 100 rounds of 9mm for 22, something like that. So it becomes very cost prohibitive to practice with it. And when I do go out to the range to practice with a variety of guns, my carry gun and the Smith & Wesson Bodyguard in particular, I try to only put, you know, 5 rounds at a time through the, or, you know, I fire 5 rounds at a time through the gun, and I try to cap it off at about 25 rounds total just because of how expensive it gets. And I just can't afford to hit the range, you know, once a month, twice a month, to practice with this gun and put 100, 200 rounds through it. It gets too expensive. So again, another thing in the con checklist or things I'm giving up. So that's my thoughts on the Smith & Wesson Bodyguard and my experiences with carrying it and one of the issues that I'm having with the DeSantis Nemesis pocket holster. So with that said, it's about time to close out the show. Like I do in every show, I want to thank you for the continued support that I've received throughout the past 15 episodes. I seem to have developed a small following, and I'm getting regular comments and regular feedback, and that's fantastic. I really appreciate that. I'm still struggling to break one of the goals I have set for myself for views. So if you could do me a favor and tell your friends about this podcast, if you've got some shooting buddies that you think may be interested, I'd really appreciate you spreading the word so that I can increase the viewer count a little bit and get some additional feedback and things like that. So again, thank you for the continued support. I really appreciate you sitting through an hour of this podcast and, you know, an hour plus of all the previous podcasts. If for any reason you want to get a hold of me to either ask me a question or talk about something on the show or tell me about something you would like my opinion on or something you would like to see on future shows, you can get a hold of me in a variety of ways. I'm active on Google Plus and Facebook. Both of those I use the username Walt White, my real name. You want to get in touch with me on Twitter, you can do so at Walt W. If you'd like to send me an email, you can do it one of two ways. You can either email me direct at walt@waltonpa.com, or you can head over to my blog, waltonpa.com, and click on the contact link, and then there's a little form you can fill out, and it'll shoot it right to me. And, you know, I'll do my best to get in touch with you or talk about whatever you want to talk about on the show. If you have any interest in sending listener feedback, like audio stuff, feel free to email MP3s, WAV files, whatever, videos, and, you know, I'll do my best to get them on the show. So again, thank you for watching the episode, and until next time, take it easy.